Blog Talk Radio.
This is XXBN Raleigh Durham. All right, welcome to another episode of the Brenneman Airplane. My often co-host lately, Rob Lightbound from Crown Weather Services in Presque Isle. You know, Rob, I was thinking I should make a movie about you, and we'll call it Sleepless in Presque Isle. I don't know if Rob's there. There's Rob.
I'm here, Phil.
Rob, I was thinking I should make a movie about you, Sleepless in Presque Isle.
Or common co-host of Brenneman Airplane. That would probably work, too.
I think so. We've got to get you a crew badge.
Yeah, no doubt.
Get you a co-pilot's uniform for the Brenneman Airplane. Rob is the forecaster for Crown Weather Services in Presque Isle, Maine, and he is our resident hurricane expert. And, Rob, what is happening in the tropics?
Well, the main story this evening is Hurricane Ike, the 8 p.m. Intermediate advisory just came out from the National Hurricane Center. Ike's position is 23.1 north, 84.0 west for those with hurricane tracking charts, or otherwise it's located over the southeastern Gulf of Mexico, 95 miles west of Havana, Cuba. So it is back over the water. Came back over the water about 3 or 4 hours ago. And the latest rapid scan satellite pictures are showing that convection is already blossoming around the center of Ike, and Key West radar is actually showing a eye trying to clear out already. So I think it's well on its way to potentially significantly intensifying over the next 24 to 36 hours. Right now, its forecast track over the next 3 to 4 days. Looking at all the computer guidance, the European model has had the best forecast track so far with Ike, and it, along with the GFDL model, is showing a landfall somewhere between Galveston and Corpus Christi late Friday night, early Saturday morning. My view on it, I definitely agree with that assessment, and I'd even shave it down to an area centered on Port O'Connor and Matagorda Bay, that area that could see a direct landfall with Ike, again, late Friday night or Saturday morning. It could potentially come in at least a Category 3 hurricane, and I emphasize that, at least Category 3 hurricane. It could very well be stronger. One key thing with Ike is that it's going to be a very large hurricane in overall size. In fact, tropical storm force winds may end up affecting the entire Gulf Coast at one point or another. I know most of the Florida Keys this evening are still receiving tropical storm force winds with gusts up over 50 to 60 miles an hour on the lower Keys as of this evening. Tropical storm force winds at this point are forecast to reach the Texas coast as early as Friday morning, with those tropical storm force winds potentially reach the Houston metro area by midday Friday. So you guys along the Texas coast should really start making preparations to really leave, especially along the central Texas coast, maybe even points north from there. I'll explain why in a minute here. Let's see what else here. I'll be over the overall weather pattern. That looks like what's going to steer Ike over the next 3 or 4 days. A weakness in the ridge, and a ridge of high pressure is now located over the northeast Gulf of Mexico. That's expected to steer Ike between a west-northwest-northwest path over the next, right through Wednesday night. After which, a ridge of high pressure will build over into the north of Ike and steer more westward on Thursday and Friday. Then a trough low pressure now coming on shore on the west coast of the United States is forecast to shift eastward. And with that approaching trough, it should pull the hurricane northwest and then potentially north. The key question is when will that northwest turn take place? My best thinking right now is that that northwest track may end up taking place right as it's coming on shore on Friday night into Saturday. And if that does occur in the way the Texas coast is kind of situated and oriented, it could very well try to ride up the Texas coast somewhat as it's making landfall. So you folks further north, really as far north as the Texas-Louisiana border, should really be thinking about getting your hurricane kit together and thinking about what to do if evacuations are issued and what plans you're going to make. Because this does have the very real danger of being a very formidable and a very, very dangerous hurricane over the next couple of days and then coming in as a very strong hurricane Friday night into Saturday. And let's see. And then a couple of other things I can think of to keep in mind. Those of you that look at the various model track guidance, be aware that Gulf of Mexico storms have a tendency to track to the right of the overall model guidance. It's just the overall bias of the models when it comes to Gulf of Mexico storms. Also, one last thing is that since it is September, troughs that are pushing eastward, they tend to erode the ridges of high pressure faster than what some of the models may be depicting. So that can easily end up being a storm that turns to the northwest and north sooner than forecast, which is why I think the upper Texas coast, even into southwest Louisiana, still at a significant risk from Ike late this week into this weekend.
Now, Rob, what does the Houston metro looking like? Do you see a possibility of, you know, a dangerous landfall that would impact Houston?
Yeah, because it's right in that area where if, as it's coming ashore, And if it's able to track quicker to the northwest as it's coming to shore, it would place the Galveston, Houston area either as a either receiving the actual overpass of the eye or being on the east side of the storm, which would push potentially up to a 15 to 20 foot storm surge right into Galveston Bay if they were on the east side of the eye wall with dike. As it stands now with the current track, Matagorda Bay, that area, even could easily see a 12 to 18 foot storm surge with Ike, because it's just such a large storm in overall size. It'll have a better opportunity to build up a mound of water over the Gulf of Mexico, and then once it comes to shore, it'll be able to push that mound of water it builds up on shore. So that storm surge could easily could still have a fairly significant storm surge well away from where Ike comes to shore. In fact, the upper Texas coast could conceivably see a 5 to 10 foot storm if Ike comes to shore at Matagorda. If it came ashore further north, obviously the storm surge would be much, much higher on the upper Texas coast.
Now, Rob, how about farther down the coast? You know, say maybe even as far as Corpus Christi or Brownsville.
I think there's still at some risk of Ike not making that northwest turn. Let's say the trough of low pressure doesn't push east as fast as the guidance is showing, and that ridge is able to hold on an extra 12 hours or so. That would give it that little bit of extra time on the west-northwest track to push it right into South Texas rather than making that sharp northwest turn as it nears the shore, as is being forecast at this point. So really at this point, pretty much the entire Texas coast is at risk. I know a NOAA reconnaissance plane will be going out tomorrow to sample the overall environment around and ahead of Ike and see what sort of wind patterns are ahead of it, and that will be fed into the models. And usually with those types of flights, they're called G4 flights. Usually with those type of flights, they help greatly in pinning down exactly where a hurricane will go, because then you have an idea of what the overall environment is on in the Gulf of Mexico. There's no one in the Gulf of Mexico to really release weather balloons like there is on land. So you really don't have a real good idea of what the upper level environment is like overall in the Gulf of Mexico, just on the land masses and that. And the models try to interpret what the environment is like over land and try to interpret that for the Gulf of Mexico too. And sometimes that's not totally correct. And the NOAA flights that they're going to fly tomorrow should clear that question up.
Now, in terms of historical comparisons, you know I always hit you with this question.
I can come up with a good one. I've been doing a lot of reading today to try to come up with a good comparison, and I didn't quite like the comparison I came up with, and that is Hurricane Carla in 1961. Did a lot of damage on the Texas coast. Give me one second. I can pull up the page I was looking at for Carla.
I'm Joe Brennan. This is XXBN.
Carla ended up being intensifying to a Category 5 hurricane, as this was in the Gulf of Mexico. It struck the Texas coast as a Category 4 hurricane and ended up making landfall between Port O'Connor and Port Lavaca on September 11th. Corpus Christi had a minimum pressure of 28.88 inches. Storm surge was 22 feet at some of the heads of the bays around where Carla made landfall. In a wind gust, and it's unfathomable to me because, I mean, you don't see this. I haven't seen these type of wind gusts in recent memory. Of 170 miles an hour was recorded at Port Lavaca. That was a recorded wind gust at a land station as Carla made landfall. It was the 8th most intense hurricane to strike the United States in the 20th century. So that is the closest comparison I can come to with Ike in terms of the overall environment, the overall weather patterns and everything. The only difference with Carla is that the trough that was coming in approaching from the west while Carla was coming in was stronger than what we're looking at with Ike. So that's the only difference, but in terms of overall size and potential strengthening, Carla is probably the closest analog to what we may be looking at with Ike. At this point, I'm going conservatively as at least a Category 3 and leaving the upper end wide open, hoping that it doesn't get much stronger than a 3. But the potential is definitely there for a very strong and a very large hurricane, because Carla brought hurricane-force winds to the entire Texas coast, basically right from Brownsville all the way up to the Texas-Louisiana border, the entire coast, hurricane-force winds and tropical storm-force winds. Obviously, extended eastward right into the central Gulf Coast. In fact, damage from Carla extended as far inland as Dallas, if I remember right, from what I was reading about Carla today. So, yeah, that's the closest analog, closest comparison to what Ike has the potential of doing to the Texas coast.
Which, that's an astonishing amount of damage even to contemplate. And I mean, Dallas is significant. I don't know off the top of my head, but Dallas, I know it's significantly inland.
Dallas is about 200, 300 miles inland from the Texas coast as the crow flies. And in $2,005, Carla caused $1.03 billion in damage, in overall damage. That's giving it the 2005 inflation numbers. It did $2.03 billion for damage. And one thing to keep in mind is that the Texas coast wasn't as built up as it is now, so 1961, the Texas coast wasn't as built up along the coast as it is now, so those dollar amounts obviously would be exponentially higher if a Carla-type storm hit today. And I fear, I hope it doesn't happen, obviously.
We've got an email question at xmeetonlive@gmail.com, and Ray in Wauhatchie, Texas is asking if you have any thoughts as to whether the Baltimore-Houston game will be played this weekend, which I'm not sure if they're even playing in Houston.
If they are playing Houston, I doubt it. I highly doubt it. Even where it's coming in on late Friday night, Saturday morning, I think with the tropical storm and potentially near hurricane force winds, even in the Houston area, I think the damage will be enough. With power outages and everything to pretty much cancel a game if it is being played in Houston this weekend.
It appears it's being played at Reliant Stadium, so I guess that's... I don't have that in front of me, but I believe it's... Well, I'm not sure, because it's kind of ambiguous. If anyone has the answer to that, if you want to call us, 646-200-3136, I will also... see if I can come up with the answer to that question. Once again, the number, if you have any questions you'd like to call and ask Rob, that number once again is 646-200-3136. You can also join us here on a Brenneman airplane on XXBN by going to xxbn.net and pressing the click to talk button, and you can use your PC's microphone. And get your question. You could also ask a question by chat if you are in the XXBN chat room. Rob, what would be a worst case for a place of landfall for this storm?
It would probably be do you mean along the Texas coast?
Yeah.
I would say just south of Galveston. So let's say it came in between Matagorda and Galveston. That would put Galveston in the right front quadrant of the eye wall. And if it came in, let's say, at a Category 4, which is what the infamous 1900 Galveston hurricane came in as, it could push a 20-foot storm surge right into Galveston Bay. So that area's not protected by the seawall in Galveston would obviously be well underwater. In fact, that surge could ride quite a ways inland. I doubt it would ride all the way to Houston for a surge, but I highly doubt it, actually. But quite a ways inland from Galveston, plus the back bays around Galveston would actually probably end up seeing worse flooding than where the seawall is, because that surge would try to go around the seawall and then come around the back bay and be trapped on the back side of the seawall and then flood the back bays with surge around Galveston. So in Houston Metro, with that type of a path, you could see 100 plus mile per hour winds in Houston Metro. And with all the skyscrapers, be a lot of damage. And I would not want to be in Houston for that, because just the flying glass would, I hate to sound morbid, but it would cut you in half, because the flying glass flying around. And that would be my worst case scenario for the Texas coast.
All right. For those just joining us, my guest is Rob Lightbound, Crown Weather Services forecaster. Rob has been my very frequent guest the last 2 weeks, since he's been with us for Gustav and for Hannah and now for Ike. And I read on the internet today, Rob, that there was at least a possibility that Josephine could be strengthened.
We're watching Josephine. We'll see. I like to get through Ike first. Maybe next week we might want to start watching Josephine as what's left of it gets closer to the Bahama Islands. In that area, they may try to pull something off and try to start redeveloping and reorganizing. But to be honest, I didn't really have much time to look at those possibilities, but that potential is there.
I had to throw it in there. I had to squeeze your shoes a little bit on that.
I know. Dig the knife in a little further, right, Jill?
You don't need to sweep every week, do you?
Oh, no.
For those just joining us, Rob, could you recap what you've shared with us? We still have arriving audience, and I do have an update. The game is at Houston. It's at Reliance Stadium at 3:15 in Houston. It will be the Texans, Baltimore Ravens. So I guess that game may be in some jeopardy, or the NFL may have to look at various options.
I highly doubt. I'd be very surprised if they had a game for this weekend there in Houston. Just with the path of Ike and the cleanup that could very well potentially happen afterwards. All based on the path and intensity, I'd be surprised if they had a game this weekend. So let me recap. The 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central update. Ike is now over the southeast Gulf of Mexico, located 95 miles west of Havana, Cuba. Those of you with hurricane tracking charts, its exact position is 23.1 north, 84.0 west, maximum winds 75 miles an hour. Its central pressure is actually showing 968-969 millibars, which has been reading kind of low, which kind of tells me that I think over the next 24 hours, or maybe even less, the winds in the core of Ike should catch up to the low pressure that the recon aircraft are recording. In fact, that 968-969 pressure equates to a mid to upper level Category 2 hurricane. So I think it's well in the cards that I think I may be at least a Category 2 hurricane by this time tomorrow night. Currently, it is forecast to track west-northwest to northwest through Wednesday night, and then track more to the west on Thursday and Friday, and then turn sharply northwest Friday night into Saturday, and potentially come make a direct landfall somewhere between Galveston and Corpus Christi with a area centered on the Port O'Connor, Matagorda Bay area. Again, I'm looking at a late Friday night, Saturday morning landfall with a intensity of at least a Category 3 hurricane or maximum winds of at least 115 miles an hour. Ike is expected to be a very large storm in overall size. Tropical storm force winds are expected to affect pretty much all of the Gulf Coast over the next 3 or 4 days. Tropical storm force winds are expected to reach Texas coast as early as Friday morning, with tropical storm force winds reaching Metro Houston by midday Friday. Again, all indications are that Ike will be potentially a very strong hurricane upon landfall along the central Texas, with the potential for a up to a 15 to 20 foot storm surge as it's coming into landfall. And there's also the possibility that it could also come in further up the coast, as far north as the Texas-Louisiana coast. One thing that was, I noticed that I kind of looked at right before I came on the air was Rita's forecast track 3.5 days before it came in to the Texas Louisiana border, where it made landfall. The 3.5 day National Hurricane Center forecast put it roughly in the area of Port O'Connor, Texas, and it ended up making landfall up on near the Texas Louisiana state line. So it kind of shows you that 3 to 4 day forecasts have pretty large margins of error. I just thought it was kind of eerie to look at the actual forecast track and overlay it with Ike's forecast track. It almost looks dead on for a forecast track, and yet Rita came in a lot further up the coast than what it was originally forecast to do. And this could be the same case with Ike by the time everything is said and done.
All right, Rob, we have a question. Meg in Presque Isle, Maine, has a question.
That's my other half.
I thought it might be. She's asking if you agree with the projected Cat 3 intensity the Weather Channel is going with.
Yes, I do. However, I think there's potential for it to be a Cat 4 at some point in the Gulf of Mexico. Whether it comes in as a Cat 4 remains to be seen, but I think it will make landfall as at least a Category 3 at landfall. So, honey, I hope that answers your question.
Frank in Dallas says, thank you, it does. This is the Brenneman airplane on XXBN. We still have Rob Lightbound from Crown Weather Services. we have them for a few more minutes. You can call in and get your questions in to Rob at 646-200-3136. That is 646-200-3136. You can go to xxbn.net and press the Click to Talk button. You can also ask your questions by chat. There's lots of good information in the chat room right now about the size of insects in the Northeast. Rob, what are the mosquitoes like in Maine?
Huge. Scarily huge. I killed one a couple days ago. And I think it was about the size of my hand in overall size. Yeah, they're some of them are mutantly big. So, yeah. And I don't quite want to get bitten by one of the mosquitoes up here. Not sure why they're so big. That's just find it funny that they're big here.
There's dispute over who killed the insect.
Okay. All right. I have killed them in the past, but this one mosquito, I will fess up, was killed by my other half, Meg, with a vacuum cleaner. She sucked it up.
You can catch all of this in the XXBN chat room. We're learning quite a bit about our XPN Crown Weather Service forecaster, Rob Lightbound. One of the questions that has come in at xbnlive@gmail.com, would Galveston or Houston see any scenario where a Katrina-type disaster could take place?
I think it would be more more for Galveston than Houston. I think Houston may be just far enough inland to avoid Katrina-type flood. But Galveston has the potential, but it does have a very high seawall. I think it's 22 feet, something like that. 22 foot high seawall built after the 1900 hurricane. For listeners that don't know about the 1900 Galveston hurricane, it came in as a Category 4 hurricane. Just to the south of Galveston, pushed I believe a 20-foot storm surge right into the island. And estimates of a death toll, I've seen anywhere from 6,000 to 12,000, depending on the text you read. The Weather Bureau at the time, the head of it, Isaac Klein, he ended up, I believe, losing his wife and one of his children during the Galveston hurricane. And it is one of the worst disasters of real U.S. history for a weather disaster. It is right up at the top for number of overall deaths. And after that, a seawall was built in Galveston to prevent that same type of a disaster from ever happening again. From what I've read, there are parts of Galveston aren't protected by the seawall, and those areas would flood very heavily during a storm surge. And if a Cat 4 came in now, the same trajectory as the 1900 Galveston hurricane, those areas that aren't protected by the seawall would be well underwater by a 15-20 foot storm surge.
Now, Rob, what does the remainder of the tropics look like? Do we see, you know, a pattern coming to an end? You know, it seems like you and I have been talking about hurricanes now for a month.
I think at this point, from this point on, after Ike is through and we see what happens or doesn't happen with what's left of Josephine next week, I think we'll be looking more towards closer into the coast, more close to, say, west of 65 west longitude, stuff that might try to develop along an old front or a tropical wave that develops east of the Leeward and Windward Islands and stays weak until it reaches right around the Bahamas. But I think at this point, Cape Verde-type storms like we've been seeing over the last several weeks, I think that's pretty much now closed for the 2008 hurricane season. And for reference, today is, I believe, the 35th day in a row that we've had a tropical storm out there in the Atlantic. 35th consecutive day.
35th day of Vibri and no dose, I think, for our staff forecaster, Rob Heitbaum.
I think I wouldn't be surprised to see maybe two or three more storms develop this hurricane season, but those would be the close-in type. Like I said, things that develop close to the coast, but the downside to that would be you wouldn't have as much warning as you would with the Cape Verde type storm. Ones that are long trackers, that gives you days and days to prepare, but I wouldn't be surprised to see something form east of the Bahamas or in the central and western Caribbean or even the Gulf of Mexico in the next 6 weeks or so. I'm looking more towards, let's say, maybe the first couple of weeks of October, maybe having a quick second, quote-unquote, peak of the hurricane center or hurricane season where you might have a quick up ramp for a week or two and then things finally die out for the entire, for the rest of the hurricane season.
Now, Rob, are we going to see you at some point, you know, say move to Lubbock, Texas and chase tornadoes?
She is really talking, isn't she?
So I just guessed that, Rob. I just guessed that off the top of my head.
Yeah. We'll see. That depends on my other half. She has family in Lubbock, Texas. I do like it out there very much. It's very nice, very warm. No snow. And after the winter we had up here last winter, I'm sick of snow and I'm not looking forward to winter. And once she graduates from college, we'll see what happens and go from there. But yes, I would like to chase tornadoes at some point. It would I think it would be a very, very big challenge that I'd be up for, and see what I can do. And, tornado chasing isn't what you think it is, in like you would see in like depicted in the infamous movie Twister, which had a good soundtrack, but I wasn't too impressed with the overall movie. But I did like the soundtrack. But normally, when you storm chase and tornado chase, you're usually 3, 4, 5 miles away from the tornado. So that, and you're positioned in such a way that the tornado is moving away from you, and there's no danger of you being swept up and carried onto the land of Oz. Actually, the biggest danger to storm chasers is actually lightning. I know of a couple of chasers that had very close calls with lightning strikes last year. One of which ended up getting knocked to the ground and had, having the tingles for a day or two from the strike, because it struck a fence and rode along the ground, and part of the discharge actually struck him.
So we could see you getting struck. Well, hear you getting struck by lightning right here on XBN.
Oh yeah, please no. My other half will already tell you that I already go outside during thunderstorms, and so I already put myself in danger every time there's a thunderstorm. Even though she's telling me to stay in the house, so obviously she has the better sense than I do when it comes to going outside during thunderstorms. I don't quite follow those safety rules. I just like watching a good thunderstorm come in and seeing all the cloud formations and hoping to catch some sort of funnel cloud or something. Tornadoes up this way in Maine are pretty rare. They do happen, but they're rare. I've seen a couple of funnel clouds, but nothing that's really touched the ground.
Now, just an interesting side note to this. Since we're on the topic of Twister, the one of the artists that does songs in the movie Twister is actually the same rock group that gives us the theme music to Run 'Em an Airplane. It's a band called Rusted Root. Now, I don't want to rub the snow thing in your face or anything, Rob, but and I hope you have sympathy for me, because I did have to brush snow off the back window of my car once last winter.
Really? Just once?
Yeah. It delayed me going to work by, you know, like 20 seconds, and that kind of screwed up my coffee, so it was kind of traumatic.
Okay. Now picture blizzard conditions, foot and a half of snow, and still having to go to work because they didn't cancel work, and having to shovel out your car to go to work, which requires roughly 20 to 30 minutes of hard labor before you even get to work, and then trying to dry off at work after being soaked by shoveling and having snow fall on you and everything. Just thought I would put that little thought in your head on why I am sick of snow.
So you're saying that that's worse than having to brush the back window of the car off once?
Just a little. Yes.
Hmm. Now we find out one of the great, well, the single greatest reason why I don't live in the Northeast. My 4 years in the Twin Cities did me in for snow. That was all winter I ever needed. 10 minutes left.
Although a great experiment to do, if you are ever in the Arctic, like I feel like we are sometimes during the winter, if it's 30 below out and it's calm, boil a pot of water, get it up to a rapid boil, carry it outside, and throw it up in the air. It instantly turns to snow.
Wow.
It's pretty cool to watch. I didn't believe it till I actually did it myself. And it's pretty much instantaneous evaporation because that water has to cool so fast because the air is so cold. That water is going from that 200, 212 degrees to that minus 30. It's trying to offset it, so it's trying to evaporate as quickly as it can. The only way it knows how to is to crystallize into snow. I'm not sure how we got from hurricanes to winter, but anyways.
Well, we were discussing the harshness of the North Carolina winter.
Yes.
Now, would that same trick work here in North Carolina?
Only if it's 20 to 30 below or colder.
Probably not. I don't remember too many 30 below.
No, that's usually really northern New England into the upper Midwest, upper plains, upper Wisconsin, upper Michigan, straight into northern New England, and obviously Canada.
I've seen it in Fairbanks.
Yep.
Seven minutes left, roughly. Well, I guess about five. Christy from Blog Talk Radio, if you're still in the chat room, come back. I have a question as to why most of my board has disappeared on the XX Fan switchboard. I think she just left. Any final thoughts on the impending storm, Hurricane Ike?
Probably the biggest thing I could say is all interests from Brownsville right up to the Texas-Louisiana border, even points east from there. Adventures, say, as far east as southwest Louisiana, really needs to track Ike very closely and then pay attention to any future hurricane watches and warnings that go up. I suspect watches will go up probably as soon as, I wouldn't be surprised, tomorrow evening or maybe even early Thursday. And then from there, I'm sure evacuation notices will be put up. And then if you are under evacuation order, get out. If you're looking for tips to learn how to prepare for a hurricane, a good website is ready.gov, ReadyGov. On there, they have a lot of good points in how to put together a hurricane kit. And then, like I said, evacuation notices go up. Listen to your local officials and take this one seriously. Now, one thing that I have mentioned in the past and I'll mention again is that not all shelters take pets. And if you have a pet and are looking for lodging so you can take your pet with you, a good website is petswelcome.com. On there you can do a search based on your location, and it'll bring up all the local hotels and motels that will take pets. And so that, because no pet should be left behind in a hurricane evacuation area. And if you're even thinking about leaving your pet behind, don't take them with you. There's means to shelter your pet. A lot of animal rescue organizations will take your pet for a predetermined amount of time. Shelters will take them just so that you can go to your own shelter. If you can't afford a motel or a hotel, if you can, then yeah, visit petswelcome.com. But by all means, don't leave your pet behind. I know we saw that a lot with Katrina, where pets were left behind, and that should never happen. As you can tell, I'm a dog lover. I have two of my own, and they go with us everywhere, plus two cats and a few fish.
And if you would like to know the names of Rob's dogs, those happen to be in the XXBN chat room, along with some other exciting information. We've had the inside scoop on Rob Lightbound tonight. Rob, where can people get all the latest information from Crown Weather Services?
Sure. The main page is www.crownweather.com. Plus, I have a Hurricane Ike specific page at www.crownweather.com/ike.html. And on there, you can find the latest watches, warnings, forecast track maps, plus satellite pictures, radar imagery, plus all the model track forecasts. And as the hurricane approaches the western Gulf of Mexico, I'll be adding links for local media, webcams, and observations from that area for folks to keep track of, like, as it approaches the western Gulf Coast. And to keep track of the local media and what they're saying out there, for usually the local media has the latest evacuation notices and other pertinent information, stuff that you can't get from the national media. That stuff really needs to come down just to the local level.
All right, and Rob, will we have you back tomorrow?
Yes, 8 p.m. on the East Coast, 7 p.m. Central. Right back on here on XBN Radio. And I'm wondering if my other half will spill more beans tomorrow night about yours truly.
Well, we'll have to see if we can get her to do just that. You know, we've had an active chat room tonight.
So is there anything bad on there, Jill, about me?
No.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
No.
Okay.
No, we put that on the XBN 900 number to get that information. All right, on behalf of Kim Kasarik in Vancouver, BC, who is producing the show this evening from Canada, and for Rob Lightbound and for Megan Prescile, my name is Jill Brenneman. This is XXBN, XXBN.net, Raleigh-Durham Chapel Hill, XXBNradio.com, Fargo, North Dakota. Brenneman Airplane is an exclusive product of XXBN. ESPN music provided by Rusted Root.